I now call this special meeting of Amherstburg Town Council to order. Happy New Year to everyone. And we will go right into the first item. Oh, sorry, disclosure of pecuniary interest. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Seeing none, we will start with the Audit and Finance Advisory Committee report. Mr. Purdy. Council Pryor?
When it comes to the part in the budget where we're dealing with recreational programs, to deal with specifically gymnastics, my daughter is indirectly working for the town with Rose City Gymnastics providing a service. So I want to make sure that because it's an indirect payment from the town to them, to her, I don't want it to be perceived as my daughter's benefiting from something I'm voting for.
Okay. I believe so. We'll put there. Go ahead.
Your Worship, members of council, on behalf of the Audit and Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to offer you our assistance in regards to the 2017 budget. The committee offers a unique perspective as it is unbiased opinion without the pressures of constituents or department accountabilities. Paramount to the committee is a priority to provide reliable advice to address organizational needs of administration, capital and operational cash flows necessary for finance, responsible governance by council, whilst providing an attractive tax base for ratepayers in respect to the current budget and while factoring future requirements. We acknowledge the impact of the current budget recommendations on the taxpayers of Amherstburg, who are facing a cumulative tax increase of 13.6% over the last 5 years. At $1,590 per $100,000 of assessed value, it positions Amherstburg higher than their neighboring communities in Lakeshore, Kingsville, Tecumseh, and Essex. Complicating a competitive market for residential, industrial, and commercial base, the Amherstburg per capita debt has been the highest in the region, topping out at $1,931 in 2015. The most alarming factor in the opinion of the committee is Amherstburg's position as the worst community in the region at a low of $444 per capita of reserves. We believe this is a ticking time bomb limiting council and providing the highest risk to budgetary overruns. Administration's proposed increase of 1.99%, while not optimum, is prudent and relative to a 1.5 rate of inflation. While it's not as attractive as LaSalle's decrease of 0.49%, it is significantly less than Tecumseh's 2.7% increase. A significant portion of the proposed increase is directly attributable to administration staffing recommendations, which is contained in their report, while other contributing factors to the proposed 1.99% increase are more contractual in nature. Administration's report will cover the justification of the proposed positions, but the 1.99 increase and implementation of positions are supported by the committee, with an exception noted here under. We acknowledge some of the positions are mandated, while others will mitigate potential overtime cost. The major exception the committee has taken with regards to proposed positions is the proposed Director of Parks, Facilities, Recreation, and Culture. The committee is of the opinion that this would provide a necessary additional tier to administration. What we are recommending is a realignment of the existing managerial staff duties that would propose an impact to the budget not to exceed $60,000, less than $159,090. Yes.
I think you can, I just asked Tim, if you could bring what you're talking about on the screen. I think it's you have a prompt on that one.
3.1.
The report itself is
just, that, just 3.1?
Click on 3.1.
Oh, sorry. Is there where you'd like us to move forward to?
Just that you know, your report is sort of following this. For the public to see somewhat what you're doing.
Let me As mentioned, the proposed budget does not address highest risk factor area, the lack of reserves. The budget should be linked to the asset management and strategic plan. While our operational budget addresses immediate concerns, it lacks addressing long-term capital budget needs over 3, 5, and 10-year targets. Currently, council utilizes reserves on a dollar-for-dollar basis. We recommend council reevaluate the methodology of applying capital reserves to servicing the debt needed to obtain required capital. Part of the reserves will be used to increase the pool of reserves, while a lower percentage would be used to cover the annual principal and interest installments needed to gather larger amounts of capital. This philosophy is fiscally responsible considering the advantageous current interest rates and would lower our average cost of capital, which currently stands at 4.1%. While reducing our underfunded gap would be a great benefit to the town. The benefit council would see is twofold. They would address underfunded reserves while supporting approved capital projects from current and prior budgets. If capital projects are left unaddressed due to lack of reserves, the estimates are no longer relevant as construction costs will increase. These are impacted by consumer price increases and, of course, higher interest rates. Worse yet, there's a risk of obsolescence to the point that an emergency repair may materialize, which would eliminate efficiencies of a tendering process in lieu of urgent repairs. With the one-year focus of the budget, often large capital projects are given a patchwork. With those costs, repairs of which are a waste of funds, in our opinion, and unnecessarily drives the total project cost upwards. If you do go to the report, I'll highlight a couple of graphs just to show you basically what we're talking about. Again, if you look, this is an abnormality with Tecumseh having a negative tax increase. And again, where Amherstburg is positioned in comparison to their local communities is slightly higher in terms of the tax increase, but by no means the highest in the area. Now, this is a more concerning chart that we tried to put together in terms of what the basic ratepayers of Amherstburg are interested in. Is for my $100,000 of assessed value, how am I comparing to some of the other areas? Well, obviously, we're not the worst. Leamington is. To attract new development, both residential, commercial, and industrial, being on the lower scale gives you that opportunity. And these are the recommended positions. As we indicated before, there's a conditional approval or recommendation of support of the parks, facility, recreation, and culture that we amalgamate some of the duties of the existing staff in order to make this happen and promote within. And there was other issues with some of these that we feel overwhelmingly there is areas that we can save. Although it should be noted, the request from administration is considerably lower than it was in last year's budget. I'll open the floor up to questions.
Any questions? Councilor Pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Pruden, for your presentation. I just wanted to touch on, you mentioned the figure of 4.1%. Would you go back over that, please? You said that we reduced it 4.1%. I wanted you to address that and to have Justin to address it. Are you saying that we could save 4.1% if we changed the way that if we eliminated some of these positions? I know you're recommending the one position. So would you elaborate on the 4.1% that you referred to?
Actually, one of the part of our analysis in the last couple of years was the current interest rates that the town is paying on some of their outstanding debt. And unfortunately, a lot of the contracts that the town has entered into, there's no way of down paying them early and lowering the cost of capital that we're doing. Now, we're talking about a weighted average. That is the current weighted average of 4.1% of all the town's debt. Now, with the interest rates being what they are and extremely low, what we're advocating is this is an open window right now to use the lower interest rates, which we don't anticipate are going to be maintained in the long term. If you take on new debt to help with some of the costs of capital projects, it will be significantly less than 4.1%. Once you put that into the pool of the total debt of the town, you're going to come under the 4.1% average interest payment debt.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Further to that, may I address our treasurer, Justin?
Sure.
Justin, could you please speak to that? Is that possible?
Through you to the councillor. Obviously, adding additional long-term debt to the municipality, it is possible, but it has to be strategic in nature. What we've done in the last few years is try to establish the ability to replace capital on a sustainable basis. If we increase our debt using the reserves to refund the repayment, basically what we will be doing is increasing the debt ratios that we're already extremely high on as far as the region and incurring more debt. Something that council and the community have kind of said, well, we need to get that under control. But to Mr. Purdy's point, we are at a point where critical infrastructure is failing. But I think we just have to be very cognizant of our positions within the community at large. We do have the lowest amount of reserves, and we do have the highest amount of long-term debt. So at this point in time, though a very sound strategy in the long run when you have significant volumes of reserves is to borrow against your reserves and use repayment, at this point in time, I would advise against it, in my professional opinion.
Councilor Melange?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. But Mr. Russo, Mr. Purdy is right. The concept of what he was trying to put forth is that if you have $1 million of debt at 4%, you have $1 million of debt at 2%, your average weighted cost is 3%. So to Mr. Purdy's argument or philosophy that he's presented, he is right.
Yes, through you to the council. Okay. Absolutely. Mr. Purdy's idea in concept is very common amongst municipalities with higher levels of reserves and lower levels of long-term debt. What they do is they use their reserves to refinance the repayment. And his concept about tying this all to the asset management plan and long-term vision is also correct. I'm just saying, given our current position, it might not be the optimal time to do so.
One more issue. Can you also explain, everybody looks at LaSalle with the decrease, and what you and I talked about before is that the assessment value, the difference in the assessment value between Amherstburg and LaSalle, what it impacted on the taxes.
Correct. Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the councillor, the town of LaSalle experienced impact growth throughout the municipality of over 4%. Therefore, they don't have to raise the mill rate on the residents. They're getting their growth through new home builds, raising income for higher assessment. Town of Amherstburg is unfortunately not as fortunate with that regard. We don't have the growth. This budget projects a 1.5% increase in growth. We've actually returned back the final full return after the budget was prepared. And that estimate of 1.5 is very close. We're within $10,000 of that projected growth. So when the residents read about the town of LaSalle and the budget decrease is a decrease of the mill rate. However, their total budget dollars have gone up. We're just not in the same situation financially.
And as you and I talk, if we would have experienced the same kind of growth, we would be looking at probably a 0% budget. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We'd be looking at a budget reduction.
Thank you.
Councilor Levine?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just curious about your comment, through you to Justin, when you say critical infrastructure is failing currently, and then you offset it with might not be the best time now in our community. I'm curious as to what your reasoning is. Is it, maybe you could elaborate for us, because that, I understand where he's headed with that, and I don't think patchwork is going to do anyone any good if we're talking critical infrastructure here that we're pushing off just to maintain a good spot on a pie graph, right? Like, I understand the political repercussions of raising taxes, but it seems like sound theory, and you're saying other municipalities do it, so when you say critical infrastructure is failing, you want to elaborate for us on that?
Through you to the councilor. What I mean is, once we hit a point where critical infrastructure is failing, where we have projects accumulating to the tune that we cannot manage with our newly established refundable, reusable funds, right? Because we've worked very hard to build sustainable funding, right? So that we can address needs as they come forward. Once we hit the point where that sustainable funds no longer can correct failing critical infrastructure, at that point, the municipality may want to incur more long-term debt.
Okay. But from what I'm hearing, isn't like the iron's hot kind of now? Is that the analogy we're trying to use? Like, rates are at the lowest, they're only going to go up, right? They can't go negative. So is it a pick your poison pill kind of thing? Like, I know we're having some serious issues at Libro and with our roads and stuff and getting these projects done. So are we pushing it off for our kids? Is that what the idea here is, to build up and to be better in the future, but at the same time maybe cutting our Achilles heel if we don't take advantage of something that, say, other municipalities are at this time? Low rates, that kind of thing. I don't want to incur debt either, long-term debt, but I don't want to do the politically correct thing right now and then 5 years realize that we're behind the eight ball because we didn't borrow at the proper time and then rates are skyrocketed through the roof and we're, you know, up the creek, so to speak. So in your opinion, is he right about his forecast here, right, with where we're at, interest rate level wise and borrowing?
Through you to the councillor. Yes, interest rates are historically low. They're seemingly going to increase. However, the critical point for the town is to build that sustainable infrastructure funding model. Municipalities that I speak of that are practicing this, for the most part, their reserve level and their debt level are very similar. So if you look on a scale, you have $40 million in reserve, you have $40 million in debt, right? The town of Amherstburg has $12 million in reserves and $40 million in debt. So we're in a different scale. So we're trying to manage this down while increasing this up. They're trying to sustain 40 and 40. It's a bit of a different situation. That's all I'm trying to say.
If I could, yeah, I just I understand that, but getting to this perfect model, how long is it going to take? And in the meantime, are we going to build up such a big list of infrastructure projects we can't afford to do that it's going to be redundant because we're going to have to borrow at that point at huge interest rates, is my point. I'd like to be the ideal, even Stephen, like these other people are, but we're not. Came in here with a different situation, and I understand what we've been doing, trying to create this new model where we pay as we go, and you know, I get that philosophy, and we're all on board. But, again, roads, arenas that are costing huge amounts of tax dollars, is it the time to swallow the pill because of the interest rates? That's my question to you as a financial advisor for the town, because I'm hearing maybe it is, but I don't see it from you as an administrator. That's my question.
Right. Through you to the councilor. At this point in time, the 2017 budget has $8.2 million in capital work, with only $1.5 million forecasted for long-term debt. The rest is done with sustainable funding. As an administrator, I don't believe we have the capacity to take on more than $8.2 million in capital works in this particular fiscal year. I think you could be going down a very dangerous road if you take on a very large, substantial project without the resources to administer that type of project. So at this point in time, I would suggest we hold off on increasing the capital budget and taking on more debt.
Through your worship to Councilor Levine, I would agree with the treasurer. I can appreciate Mr. Purdy's position and what he's recommending, but the reality of it is this. We have built into our capital budget 2% reserve contributions for the capital levy and 2% for the reserve replacement. That is basically the ceiling of the debt repayment limit if we were to move forward in this philosophy. So what I'm telling you is basically we got 400 grand to service debt. Once that's expired, that $400,000 to service whatever debt we issue, we have to go back to the ratepayers and ask them for more money. So the concern that I have is, it's sustainable, but we don't have the growth on the assessment side to help us out like other municipalities have. We don't have the reserves that other municipalities have to act as that buffer. So the only thing that we can do in the event of an emergency, if something comes, because right now we've got that little buffer built in, we built that capital and reserve levy, is go back and issue more debt and ask for more tax dollars. I heard very clearly when I came here that that was not what this community wanted. They did not want to issue more debt. Mr. Purdy in his report has said we have the highest debt per capita ratio. I can appreciate that. But what we have been doing as a municipality is showing financial constraint and ensuring that we're working within the means that we have been provided. It might not make everybody happy. However, I think we have done the responsible thing. We are developing our asset management plan. We're working towards that. We don't have all the information to offer everyone. We've gone through, we've done a road needs assessment. We're going to bring that forward. We've done our bridge studies. We're assembling all this information. I'm a little concerned, and we don't have the resources on our side to manage these projects. So in the past, this municipality ran many projects over budget. We've delivered Texas Road on budget. We've delivered other projects on budget. I do not want to open up Pandora's box myself and not have the appropriate resources or staff to manage these things and then come back to you folks and say, yeah, we did all this work, but now we're thousands of dollars over on this project, thousands of dollars on that project, but we got all these things done. I'm a little cautious, excuse me, I'm an administrator that's very reserved and cautious when it comes to that way, and I can appreciate what Mr. Purdy says. At this point in time, I would feel very, very concerned moving in this direction.
Councilor Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our concerns too, but when people mention Mr. Purdy's opinion, I think it's opinion of the committee that he's representing tonight. Being on that committee, I sat in a few of the meetings. I wasn't there for all of them, but I can say that it's the committee's decision to like what the administration's putting forward to the residents in the positions. But as Mr. Michelli just said, you know, I think we're at the constraints of the ratepayers. MPAC assessments through you, Mr. Mayor, to Justin. I don't think anybody's assessment went down, or very few people went down. And if you ask the farmers around town, theirs went up significantly. So to say that we weren't in a windfall as other municipalities or like municipalities, I think we're in a good situation with MPAC increases happening this year. And I don't think we're lagging behind too much. Yes, development. Yes, you know, we had quite a few growths in new homes. We're still striving to try and bring in new business like Lakeshore, other communities. But I think when you look at, you know, anybody, if you went and asked them if their impact went down, I have a hard time believing that everybody put an application in to get it reduced because, you know, overall, the home sales have gone up. Everybody knows who's selling and buying. Home prices have gone up. A good friend of mine is a regional director for the Brantford area, and he said, yes, this area is up between 2 to 4%. And when you got a farm, it's up as high as 20%. So depending on how many acreage you have. So in those percentages, you're looking at over a basis of 4 years. So 12% to 20%, you're looking at 4 or 5% increase before a mill rate increase by the municipality. So I think we really have to look at projects and get back to, I heard this quite a bit over the holidays, getting back to basics. The basics of the municipalities are roads, infrastructure, providing good infrastructure that municipality and the residents can use, need the recreation center. We got to get that back on track. Yes, it was kind of passed through a few people's hands, through managers and things like that, but I think we're going in the right direction with that. But to sit here and say that I agree with even the committee that I sit on, I don't. There's not too many positions that I think that are we should move forward right now. I think we're still in that hesitation state. Just like Mr. Michelli said, I don't want to open Pandora's box and look at us being one of the major employers for the municipality. I want to keep our numbers for employees lean so we can go back to the residents and say, look, we've done our job. But we need to provide you roads, bridges. There's many bridges out there that need to be replaced. I think there were 6 emails that was sent to me on a road particular that I'm going to speak about tonight, that she's got 99 pictures of one road. And it's not even a very long road. So how can we sit here and say, yes, you know this, or don't go ahead and borrow money when it's at historic lows? I understand that, but we got to deliver to the residents. That's our job, is service delivery back to the residents.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, just a quick comment. With regards to mill rate or assessment increases, I understand what you're saying, Councilor Fryer. Many residents have seen significant increases in their assessment. However, when you're talking about the budget, it is not just the envelope of the residents. It's the envelope of the industrial. It's the envelope of the commercial. It's the envelope of all of that. And what we're seeing is, yes, the farmers have significant increases. Yes, the residents have significant increases. The quarry lands, the commercial centers, all of that is decreasing much significant, very crucial, significant tax dollars. And when we're looking at an overall increase, it is less than 1.5% on the weighted assessment average right now, contrary to what MPAC has been saying, because they only talk about the residential piece. They're not talking about the full picture. So we have to think about the full picture of what's taking place, and that number is significantly different than what you might hear from 95% to 90% of the residents, because that 5% are the very large taxpayers, and those are the properties that are decreasing in value, that are hurting the ability for the town to garner those funds. So just a point of reference for council, I mean, that's what we're seeing, so it's important that council understands that.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Just to follow up, I understand that, but the only thing you have to realize is you can't continuously go after the residents, the homeowners, and expect us to be a retirement community, because retirees, last time I checked, do not get an increase in their pensions. So when you sit here for 4 years and say, yes, we've only increased tax 2%, over 4 years, that's 8% compounded increase we gave to the residents. When you do that over 10 years, you're looking at a 20% increase compounded to that retiree that you're promoting to come move here from Toronto, Ottawa. People are saying, look, yeah, well, I understand what you're saying, but we can't continue to do this. So we've got to get back to service delivery, and I think that's what hopefully when we're done with this budget, we're looking at delivering services to residents that are necessary. The extras that we've been doing and people have been looking at, I think we need to trim those to show the residents, look, yeah, we need to continue to provide a service to you, but we're also cutting our belt back here too.
Councilor Pelletier.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One last question. It pertains to a comment that and a concern of Councilor Levine has. I have the same concern, if I may, through you, Mr. Mayor, to Justin. Justin, was the Finance Committee, the Audit and Finance Committee, aware of the fact that we need to upgrade the water treatment plant at a cost of $30 million within 10 years, and that we do not have enough money in the reserves. Were they aware of that when they? I understand that we're talking about taxes and we're talking about something different, but it comes out of the same pocket of our taxpayers. I just wondered if they were aware of that when they went into this session.
Through you to the counselor. Yeah, you're right. I mean, all of the debt ratios, the debt figure that we speak of, isn't all funded by the municipal tax rate. Only $10 million of it is. The much larger portion is funded by the water and wastewater rates. The water debt is at approximately $4 million, and that's a very small piece, but you're right. We are looking at significant upgrades there, and those factors do come into play when we're talking about a long-range forecasting of the municipality's future borrowings and endeavors. So those are important factors to be aware of.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Justin, I don't think you answered my question. Was the audit committee aware of this when they sat down to do budget deliberations?
That specific piece, I don't believe so, but the audit committee is aware of the long-term financial plan, which does outline in draft form the commitments over the next 10 years, which that water plant and its upgrades are included in. So we've looked at that as a committee as well. So
they would have been aware of $30 million within 10 years and not enough money in reserves in that account when they made the decisions regarding the number of people that the town is requesting to employ. They had all that those figures when they made that decision.
That long-range forecast actually looks at over $95 million in upgrades over a 10-year period and looks at three of the streams of revenue: taxation, water, and wastewater, and explores the long-term borrowing and reserve contributions. So all of that is contained within that report from 2014.
Excuse me if I can pipe in, Your Worship, to Councilor Puget. The positions that are recommended are funded from the tax base and have nothing to do with the water base, just so that we're aware.
Yeah, I understand that completely, but we're talking about debt. And it doesn't matter where it comes from, if it comes from our taxes or it comes from our water and wastewater rates. It's our residents that have to pay it. And it might have changed things for the audit committee if they were aware of that. That's what my concern is.
Councilman Love.
Thank you. Mr. Purdy's discussion was nothing more than a philosophy in terms of as an option, this particular philosophy as an option to different methods of financing. Right or wrong, situational issues, as you know, Mr. Russo's talking about situations that he feels it's not right given a situation. This is a philosophy. We either buy into it or we don't buy into it. So I don't want us to be discounting his philosophy, because, or not when I say his, the committee's philosophy, because it's a good approach, maybe in a different circumstance, or you know. So again, we just understand that it's an option to consider at a certain point in time. And the other thing is I want to take this time to thank the committee, Mr. Purdy, and the committee for the time that they spent. They spent a lot of time, good quality time, discussions to put this together. It wasn't just something that was done, rather quickly. We spent a lot of hours, long hours, going through this. And so I want to commend everybody on the committee for their time and effort.
Your Worship, if I may.
Yeah.
I'd just add a little clarity to it. This may help. While we're talking about the $8 million of capital requirements, it should be acknowledged that isn't the total requirement. One of the considerations we are going through is we're looking at the immediate targeted project capital projects that are being done. But we also noted there was a lot of other projects that weren't prioritized, and some of them basically were being approved from prior budgets. So while in Mr. Councilman Walsh is quite correct, it can be a little simplistic, but to put things in a proper perspective, let's take $1.1 million on the second concession. okay? It's not a big ticket item, but on a dollar-for-dollar basis, it's not administration's recommendation to do the repair rate on the second concession. We are entertaining a possible rate of 2.3% to borrow. So if we're looking at $1 million project today at 2.3%, we're looking at $23,000 to service that debt in year one. Okay, so we don't need $1 million, what we need is $25,000. When we talk about spending good money into bad projects, I don't have the figures, we didn't have them available. It is quite possible that the patchwork just in 1 year alone would have significantly been close to $23,000 for the patchwork on the second concession. I have confidence that each year they do patchwork, we were probably looking at a break-even point for that 1 year to finance the whole project using reserve to pay the interest and principal portion. Within probably 2 years, I'm fairly confident that the money council has spent on that one small repair job that isn't going away probably was covered within the patchwork of 1 year, possibly two. So all we're advocating is, while not a popular political opinion at the present time, considering the past occurrences, we're not constrained by that as a committee. We're looking at what is prudent under the circumstances. You may be able to get $1 million of capital at 2.3% today, but it may cost you 5% or 6%, probably not, when you do decide to make that capital project a reality. And that's the different philosophy we're saying should be entertained and weighed against some of the projects that are being going. It is a advantageous time. Thank you.
Just a question on that. So I fully appreciate what you're saying, but in a few years' time, if we had more reserves, we'd also be in a better position and negotiate a better rate, possibly. I mean, this just comes down to no one has a crystal ball, right? And both trying to figure out what the balance is, I guess.
Based on our expertise, we're fairly confident that interest rates are going to go up. To what extent? Absolutely, we don't know to what extent. The problem you have right now is you look at, and I think Justin put a great chart together on page 20, the proposed budget of the underfunded gap, and it's astronomical. You're still looking at about $14 million. Now, you have a lot of projects that need to be done, and I know council wants to do them because the ratepayers are requesting them, okay? But again, we're talking the cart and the horse. You want development. A primary focus of attracting development, residential, industrial, commercial, is you have to support it with infrastructure. So if you have the infrastructure, is it reasonable to conclude you'll have an easier time attracting development? And that's a key focus. You're assuming at some point that you can attract development, and then based on the snowball effect of gaining tax revenues, now be able to do the infrastructure. What I'm proposing to council is to take a step back for a second and look at the opposite. Infrastructure attracts development. And these projects aren't going away. You've done a good job of highlighting them. Some of your costs may not be up to date, but you know you have an unenviable task of all this infrastructure has to get done at some point. I would hate to see council try and tackle some of these infrastructure projects at a much higher interest rate, then I believe your hands will be considerably tied. And we're not advocating an all or nothing approach. What we're saying is, if there is a small portion of the reserves you set aside and you use to service debt capital, you can knock a few more of these projects off. Absolutely, we're not advocating using reserves 100% to service the debt capital. We don't feel that would be wise. But we do feel there is a blended approach that could be employed.
Councilor Levine?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So we don't have a crystal ball, but we can kind of look back. In your opinion, is that what happened to this town? Is that it was pay as you go, we didn't have large debt, and then all of a sudden we decided we had to get all this infrastructure done, and the interest rates were through the roof, and they went and borrowed 40 some odd million dollars to do all this stuff at super high interest rates, and now we're trying to catch up and pay this all back. And that's kind of where you're going with this. Don't get in the same spot in 10 years by waiting to build up your bank account pretty, and then you have to borrow because you're way behind the ball, and the interest rates are going to be way up here when you could have done it when they're way down here.
100% of what you're saying. When we talk about the inherent risk factors that are presented to council right now, is I use the word accurately, I believe, when we talked about, the committee talked about a ticking time bomb. All of a sudden, if you run out of time on these capital projects, at the rate you're funding reserves, remember, we came with the same speech last year. We said we would approve the tax increase if we cut back on positions and allocate some of the money to reserves. Now, we weren't advocating a one-for-one dollar of the reserves to project because at that time, and we are still of the belief, it doesn't address the underfunded capital gap significantly enough that it gives the town protection. You're still at a very high risk factor that if these projects have to get done, and we're assuming right now that the costs are still fairly relevant, I would question that as well, because at the time that they were laid out, some of these projects were identified a considerable time before, and you can only put the CPI on this so long and say that will be the relative increase. What we're recommending is mitigate your risk. Even if you can tackle an additional $100,000 to $300,000 project, it addresses the underfunded gap. We're not advising council to undertake the whole capital projects and go after them right now. Choose strategically. Use the interest rates to your best interest. Don't get caught doing these projects at higher rates.
Justin?
I'd just like to address that. Is this what happened to the town comment there? In a period of 2009 till 2013, the town invested $100 million in capital to secure future growth. They invested $35 million in the sewer plant and $26 million in the Libro Center. That accounts for over 60% of the town's new debt. Those are two very large projects. So I just didn't want anyone to take away, is that what happened to the town? Those are where your investments are. I just wanted to make sure that's crystal clear to everyone. And also, this idea of borrowing from the reserves to finance debt repayment is exactly what happened with the town's development charge reserve between 2002 till now. The town was borrowing funds to do capital projects by financing against its development charge reserve. And that led to the allegations that that reserve was not properly funded or accounted for. So I just caution, because some of these philosophies in the past have gotten the town into some unadvantageous positions. That is all.
Just a minute for it.
Yeah, thank you. Those two projects weren't the whole of it. I lived in this town my whole life, Justin. During that period of time, Sandwich Street sidewalk was redone six times. There was streetlight projects. There was planner projects. There was $1 million spent at gateways. And when you came in as position, you were very clear with us that all that borrowing incurred a huge high interest rates that were all over the place. None of them were at the same level. We had some at 7%, some at 4%. Am I correct in saying that, or were we being misled?
No, most of that 2014, it was all debentured in July of 2014 at a rate of under 4%. The 7.5% is the loan for the Malden Sewer Control Plant that was issued in 2002. That's the highest loan that we have, 7.5%. Most of the other debt is under 4%. That's why we have a weighted average of 4.1. So just to make sure that everybody in the room is clear on that, because I just want to make sure that that's straight.
Okay. Well, if we take the Malden Sewer Project, maybe if they waited until it was at 7%, maybe if we have a project like that in here and we can get it at 2, we don't wait until it blows up and it's at 7, is all I'm trying to say. Like, to suggest that it's just the Libro Center and not that put us in the $46 million in debt is a little naive. Because the town didn't do a lot of stuff for a long time. They didn't raise taxes. We didn't put money aside. And then all of a sudden, we went on a spending spree. And you were very clear with us, I thought, that everything was mishmashed all over the place and you had to get it all into one umbrella. So when I hear financial advisors say yes, like I do when I go to the bank for a house, they say, well, if your mortgage is at 4, why wouldn't you remortgage when it's down at 2 and use that weighted leverage to do some work on the house so it doesn't come back at and bite you in the end? That's what I'm looking at the philosophy, right? So when you're saying we can just put it off again, I'm saying, well, maybe that's what happened to some previous councils. They just put it off, don't raise taxes, don't spend that money. And then when they had to borrow it, it was 7%. Right? And if it's historically the lowest it's ever been, maybe there is a project in here that you haven't identified for us, and that's what I'm trying to get at. Okay, I'm not trying to say that we just all of a sudden blew up because they waited too long, but there were a lot of projects in here that were borrowed probably too high that should have been done previously when the rates were lower. Correct?
That I can agree with.
Okay.
Councilor Malone?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And Justin, I guess just one point everybody understands to it. That $24 million and the $36 million, those were really projects that could support a population of almost twice the size of what we have now. And so, unfortunately, the burden is put on 20,000 as opposed to having the ability to service 40,000 with that same expenditure. Correct?
I would agree with your assessment. The pollution control plant is built to handle significant capacity, as is the Libro Center.
Okay, Councilor Fryer.
So, and just to continue with the conversation, those projects and the infrastructure we did put in does lead us to future growth. So, yes, we have 24,000 paying now, but the outlook for those projects were always for the future. And that's what we're looking at, hopefully bringing in business. Right now we've hung our hat on tourism so much, I think we've lost, and I'm just my opinion, we've lost focus on bringing industry back to Emmitsburg, which we used to be the place to come and live, and you could walk to work when we had so many employers. We've gotten away from that. Lakeshore's kind of taken the bull by the horn and has taken over that, and I think hopefully in the future with our council and the forward thinking of the COA, the CAO, and things like that, we can take that back by looking at, we have the infrastructure, we are paying our bills, we are able to manage, and that negativity that was out there before, I think you're going to see more people coming here than most municipalities in Essex County.
Okay, I think we should move on to the next item because we have quite a few people waiting. Councilor Fryer?
We make a motion to receive the presentation by the Audit Finance Committee.
Second, Councilor Melange. All those in favor? Carried. Thank you, Mr. Purdy. 3.2, Kathy DeBartolomeo for the Emmitsburg Community Services.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of Town Council. I would like to thank you for this opportunity to speak before you tonight regarding our grant, community grant submission. In every town, village, or city, there are elements that exist that are difficult to deal with, but must not be brushed aside. These elements affect our most vulnerable neighbors and include ongoing issues such as abuse, mental health issues, care for the elderly, or those who are unable to care for themselves. Some of our well-known services, such as Meals on Wheels, which this past year the mayor and representatives from the police and fire department experienced firsthand what it is like to deliver meals to local seniors, and again, thank you to all of you. Accessible transportation, security calls and visits are partially funded by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care and the Erie St. Clair Lynn. However, we also deliver vital services without provincial or federal funding, such as Hiatus House, Windsor, Essex County Family Services, Probation Services, Sexual Assault Counseling, and Teen Health Counseling. Some of our programs assist low-income families and individuals and are meant to provide supports that will assist in their daily financial struggles. At ACS, we also like to focus on the positive side of our community. Those who are new to Amherstburg come to us to find out the who, what, and where of town. We have introduced two fundraisers, Super Wednesday and the Wine and Hop Walk. Both events showcase the great dining experiences available in Amherstburg while allowing us to bring awareness about our agency. We are constantly striving to find new ways to meet the needs and demands of a growing community. Our organization is all about improving our community as a whole and providing supports which will teach people of all ages to become more self-sufficient. We plan to use this grant towards some new and exciting initiatives that we feel will give residents an even stronger sense of community and give them a better idea of services available to them, not only in Amherstburg, but also the surrounding areas. Once again, thank you for this opportunity to speak before you and address how important this grant is for the continuation of vital services to the residents of this town.
Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, if I may just remind Council that item 4.2 of your budget agenda package is the community grant report, and it gives you the dollar amounts for the requested grant groups. Is page 13 of the budget document electronically.
Okay, any questions? Councilor Melange?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your organization is, I'm assuming it's a not-for-profit, but are these paid people? Are they all volunteers? How is your organization?
We have 12 paid staff, and we also have approximately 100 volunteers.
All in this area?
Yes. Well, LaSalle, McGregor, and Harrell also, the volunteers.
Okay, you can call yourself Amherstburg Community Services, but you encompass a larger reach, is what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. Now, the monies that, $5,000 that you're requesting, will that be spent in the Amherstburg community?
Yes, we are using that right now to shuttle students to St. Clair.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to provide classes to teach citizens how to live better on a lower income, and those will be our classes will start with just within Amherstburg. We start.
Through some of my other contacts, are you experiencing? I know what you talked about here, the Ontario Electrical Support Program. Are you seeing a lot more demand for your services because of elderly that can't afford or low income people can't afford hydro?
Those numbers continue to rise, unfortunately.
That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Food banks are requesting more and more, mm-hmm. and they're saying that's what's happening. Is there
and actually, the amount of the bills have really gone up significantly. I remember when I started in 2009 in this position, they were probably people were applying for maybe $300 to $500 behind on their bill. Now mm-hmm. it's like thousands. Mm-hmm. Now it's 3,000 up to 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, thank you.
Any other questions, mm-hmm. Councilor Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to the presenter. I'm just curious. Through your own budget, the town, the cost to rent the building from the town. Can you enlighten council on how much that costs?
To rent the building from you, we are paying. I believe it's $4,800 a month, around there.
To rent from the municipality.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, is there any relief we can give them to help offset the grant? And
through your worship to Councilor Fryer, my understanding is that it's inclusive of a capital repayment. So it was really through the lease they were repaying a loan for capital improvements because they didn't have the money to actually do the improvements in the building. If council wishes to waive that, that's council's prerogative. That is my understanding. I wasn't here when that deal was created, but that is my understanding of why it's that high.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's an outstanding capital investment we put into one of our municipally owned buildings that they're using.
Correct. And once that repayment is made, then we would revisit the actual lease, which would be probably less or I don't know. I don't have all the details, but
can those be provided to us? So that way we have a better idea moving forward what we're going to be looking at and how we can better help other charities or other organizations that are looking for help from council. This way here, if we're relieving them from some of the capital project that they put in, then we can offset to what we're...
Through your worship to Councilor Fryer, we can bring back the report. I don't know, Kathy, if you know offhand what the term of that lease was.
It's a 14-year lease.
Yeah.
14.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and when does that expire? I'm not sure.
We moved in 2012.
In 2012?
Yeah.
Yes, so you're looking at 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Councilor Pelugin?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Kathy. But I just want to remind council, no one has requested that, they're only requesting $5,000, and we're here we're saying that we have to keep control of our budget, and we have to live within our means, and no one asked from community services to go back in and renegotiate a contract. They entered the contract with us in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
It required a lot of work to get that building up to par for what they needed. It required a lot of, infrastructure inside. So I'm just reminding council that, you know, unless they actually ask for any relief, I think we really should be watching this very closely.
That's a good point. And you were there when it was all negotiated, so thank you for that information. And I don't think the lease is an issue, right? Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you. 3.3, the Amherstburg Food and Fellowship Mission. Mr. McAllister. Just push the button at the front there.
Okay. The Honorable Mayor and Council, thank you for the opportunity to come before you this evening. We see people who come in for help facing difficult times. Our program is consistent with our mission, helping people. We continue to give a helping hand and by providing fellowship and compassion to seniors, adults, children, mothers of young babies, and people who are unable to leave their home. Our meal service for 2016 was 14,546. Baskets given out for 2016 was 619. We also provide a baby food program. I didn't get the number for 2016, but last year was for 2015, we provide 72 baby food boxes from January to December. We are requesting support which pay a meaningful difference in the lives of men. I hope that you will find in your budget to continue supporting our effort. As we begin, we look forward to continue this trend in the new year. We all play a part in success in this community that we are so proud of. The dedication of individuals, both young and old, will help us as we face the challenges going forward, and that touched my heart. If you require any more information regarding this request, please do not hesitate to contact.
Any questions? Councilor Melange?
Thank you. Do you provide a similar service to the Amherstburg Food Bank?
The service?
The Amherstburg Food Bank. Do you provide a similar service?
To the Amherstburg Food Bank, like?
Yeah, right here in Richmond.
Well, we, we have a food bank there as well.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm saying, but you work with them at all, or?
Well, as I said, we don't, sit, like, talk. We tried to merge a long time ago, but it didn't work out.
Well, I understand. Just that my family just finished a 2016 program where we just brought 2,500 cans to food banks between Amherstburg and Essex and McGregor. And I mean, I see your organization as possibly, you know, being put on the list for 2017. But at the same time, I'm just questioning, you know, is there some duplication of efforts? Is there some synergies between both yourself and the Amherstburg Food Bank, you know, in providing the service? And I just, I'm questioning that aspect as well.
Okay, for our service, like we give more, like we get like tomatoes and pepper and cucumbers once a week from Limington. So we get milk from your unemployment, we get eggs. So we get a lot of more supplies to give to the people who come in for help.
Maybe I could help. They're a little more than a food bank. They also have stuff like computer access, family services. You have a working kitchen, correct? So they're not just providing food, but also cooking meals and a variety of different things that some food banks do. If anybody's curious, I would recommend going by. I've been by, and it's an amazing facility that helps a lot of people. Councilor Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Barron. I think that other organization was before us before, and I mentioned that they're helping people in the core area that have to walk, can't necessarily get so far. I appreciate the donations that go into the both organizations. I know the locals help out your mission as well, and the fact that you did bring up, Mr. Mayor, that it is a working kitchen. It helps out quite a few people, and there's quite a few families that have a hard time having meals. I appreciate the work you do.
Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. McAllister. 3.4, we're gonna receive them all when we're done there. House of Shalom, Rebecca Vanderbart.
All right, I'm going to apologize. I've never read off of this before, so we're gonna see how it goes. Also, I talk a little bit more than everybody else, so. I want to thank you all for having us here tonight, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over what all of our services are. It's not the first time I've come in front of you and told you what we do, so I'm not going, you have a long night ahead of you as it is. So to recap, the house has been, I'm going to move this, the house has been in operation since the 1970s. And when it was designed to be a place just specifically for teenagers, because that was a service that was missing in Amherstburg. There was lots of programming for youth, and obviously once you're an adult, you have lots to do, but teenagers didn't. So it was a place where outside of work and their education and outside of their home life, that they could be nurtured and focused on, that all of their best assets could be found and kind of fine-tuned before they went into adulthood. It was a safe place, an encouraging place, a place where other adults can sometimes challenge them and help them grow. And this is all done through a four-year program that you go through in high school with your peers, ran by a team of dedicated adult volunteer mentors. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since the 70s, but the fundamental needs of a teenager have not. Well, I wasn't around in the 70s. I can tell you that I know this because I've looked at our program and how it was run 45 years ago and how it's run now, and that's identical. And it's obviously thriving. I can see that by the numbers of youth that we have coming in every year, but also by the number of programs that we've been able to expand in. So because you have supported us in the past and we're here asking for your support again, I thought kind of the best way to update you would be to tell you just all of the new programs and opportunities that we launched in 2016. So we partnered with Triple P Parenting to offer parenting classes to parents of teenagers. If any of you have teenagers, they can be difficult to live with. So it is a course that provides information and support and practical tips for like the day-to-day life of real raising resilient and healthy teenagers. We took them on a camping trip this summer, which everyone told me I was crazy about, and they were accurate. But we took 20 teenagers camping in the woods with no cell phones and no electronics. And it was a time for them to disengage with everything else and focus on actually being with the people that you're with outside of social media. We did stand-up paddleboarding classes in Lakeshore, which is a very healthy way to get them physically active. We worked with New Beginnings to teach our youth about healthy social media habits. We developed a program called Recess, which is specifically catered to grade 8 students and focuses on decision-making and healthy boundaries, peer pressure. It's kind of a mini version of what we do through our 4 years. We partnered with the Fort Melvin Horticultural Society, something I'm very excited about. And it's kind of twofold. A, we get to help their organization and all of the efforts that they do in town. But it also is getting our kids, again, off of their cell phones and out into nature. And obviously gardening has so many therapeutic values, which they're starting to learn. We worked with the Unemployed Help Center to provide meaningful employment for, we started with 4 youth in 2016. So that's a 10-week employment opportunity that they get at the house, because a lot of teenagers, it's difficult for them to get jobs when they have no previous work experience. And we actually take them through a training program as well that teaches interviewing skills and proper work ethic and things like that. We designed it's called the LIT program, so it's the Leaders in Training program for grade 12s, which teaches our students after they're kind of at the tail end of our program and about to graduate. It's practical tips on how to be effective leaders in whatever they're doing post-high school. We also had free Saturday morning yoga classes last spring and music nights with some local artists here in town who are helping our students for free to kind of fine-tune their musical abilities and performances. But in addition to this, something I really want you all to note is that our youth did approximately 2,200 volunteer hours that they gave back into the community this past year. That does not include any volunteering that they did in the building or for our fundraisers or for our own events. That's 2,200 hours. That comes from, we volunteer with the Canada Day at Fort Melvin, Rotary Club's Rig Fest, Mardi Gras and Harvest Fest. We worked with Fort Melvin and Parks Canada to bring the Haunted Fort tours again this year, which if you weren't there, they sold out all 4 nights and brought hundreds of people from outside of Amherstburg that were coming in for those events. Like I said, we partnered with the Horticultural Society, and we also provided volunteers for all 5 weekends of the River Lights Festival. In addition to that, we have 45 adult volunteer mentors that there's only one of only 2 full-time staff members, so those volunteers really make up our program. They commit to 190 volunteer hours a year. Multiply that by your 45 leaders, you have 8,500 volunteer hours put in by adult peer mentors in this town that they're investing in those youth, which sounds crazy, and I realize that, but that amount, when somebody comes in our building, and a lot of our mentors are people that have gone through the program themselves, but some have come from outside, and it happens because they come in, and when you sit through a Wednesday night meeting, and you listen to a student talk about how they're struggling to heal or move on from a sexual assault, or living with family members that are addicts, or are have an abusive childhood, or they're being bullied at school, they're struggling with mental illnesses. When you come in and you listen to that, it's very difficult not to want to give, which is how we have those leaders and those adults. It's very easy to give 190 volunteer hours in that year. So when you have those adults that are investing thousands of hours into our youth are in turn going and investing thousands of hours back into their community. They're growing up and they're graduating and they're becoming police officers and teachers, social workers and counselors and nurses. And they're able to do that because at 16, somebody invested time and money in them. And that's all we're really asking for, is that continued support, that you see those things that our youth are doing in the community, that you believe in our program and how we're doing that, and that you continue to support us in that. So thank you.
Any questions? Councillor Fryer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for your presentation. I was a member of the House of Shalom. I was a leader afterwards. It's most rewarding as a member and even more as a leader.
Absolutely.
To help youth and then to continue that on a day-to-day basis throughout your life. It's an organization that many other communities in Essex County and maybe Canada are very jealous, because we do have that and do have the ability to help the youth in our community. If you've seen the recent commercial on hockey and the kids coming in, and each of them have a lawyer, or they have a doctor's hat on, or a construction worker, every kid that gets touched by somebody else ends up in a profession that ends up helping somebody in the future. So this is a no-brainer for me. I appreciate your presentation. I didn't have to be that long for me to be convinced to continue funding.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
And that brings us to 3.5, Amherstburg Freedom Museum. Mary Catherine and Monty.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. My name is Monty Logan. And to the mayor and council, I'm privileged to be here today to make a representation to council based on the authority of the board of the museum. And I'd like to thank the town for the previous support for the Amherstburg Freedom Museum, and we look forward to your continued support. Our submission is presented to you for consideration and reflection as to the work and the benefit for the community as a whole, right, as you develop the priorities of the cultural and heritage and tourism requirements for Amherstburg. And as outlined in our submission, we present to you the ways in which we are operating as a nonprofit corporation, and we're attempting to achieve our goals. And we have outlined the immediate and projected cost of administration and the major budget line items to allow us to reach our mission. What I will do is I'm going to turn over to Mary Catherine to talk about our key objectives, and then we'll turn it back to you.
So the Amherstburg Freedom Museum, it exists to preserve the Black heritage of the region and the history of the Underground Railroad. The museum, it actively collects, preserves, and interprets, researches, and exhibits a collection of artifacts in our archives of historical and cultural value. The museum has renewed its focus and highlights on the Amherstburg stories of the Underground Railroad and the compassion and solidarity it took to make this network possible. We promote the town of Amherstburg as a chief entry point of the Black refugees seeking freedom in Canada as they traveled the Underground Railroad in the 1800s. Through our annual events, we provide rich experiences of Black culture and history to both residents and visitors. These events, such as our Ribs and Ragtime events and Christmas at the Museum, draw visitors from out of town, and these visitors, they stay and they visit the town. The museum has a website and a Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, which draws tourists from around the world. Visitors then often ask museum personnel when they visit for information on what else to do while they're in town, and we provide suggestions on tourist destinations, restaurants, and shopping.
So with that, we'll end it there.
Any questions? Councilor Carr?
Yes, Mayor. Through you to Monty. Monty, I was there when the discussions were happening, and I'm just curious with the new name. How are, I know it's not related to your request for funding, but with the change in name, what's the reception you're getting from people from outside the area and locally?
The reception is becoming more positive. Initially, the community, the African-Canadian community initially had initial kind of pullback, but now they're coming around, truly understanding that by moving forward and focusing on Amherstburg as a whole, as opposed to just the Black community, we have a stronger tie and a greater appeal to a larger audience. So,
yeah, if I could speak to that. A lot of people do mention that they feel it's more inclusive and it tells a broader story than just something that's very niche. So we're able to expand on that and sort of expand our programming in that way.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you. And 3.6, Amherstburg Historic Sites Association, Stephanie Pouche-Papik.
Hello, Mayor and Council members. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak tonight. I am the curator of the Park House Museum, which is our common name. The more formal name is the Amherstburg Historic Sites Association. I'm here to speak to you on behalf of our organization regarding the community grant. The last time I was here, I discussed our role in supporting the creation of tourism dollars in our community, and that relatively remains unchanged, so I don't think I need to go into too much detail of that. Museums such as the Park House Museum help facilitate tourist needs and interests in our community, which generates additional customers for our shops, restaurants, and vice versa, thus creating a continuous circle of community support and progress. This evening, I would like to place a larger focus on what you're supporting with the community grant and the importance of our museum within the community. This past summer, during Communities in Bloom, some of you had the chance to visit the museum, but you only had a small taste of what we had to offer. The pun's not intended, but appreciate it. We offer a wide variety of programs, exhibits, events that are inclusive of age, gender, and culture. Our goal is to have something for everyone, albeit not all at once, but throughout each operational year, we like to have something for everybody. Over the past 3 years, my focus as curator has been to combine our museum's mission statement with what I define as the three C's of being a great museum, and that is cultural heritage, collaboration, and collections management. Recently, there was a large amount of discussion on the historical importance of Bellevue and its value to our community, and I want to remind everyone that the Park House Museum parallels a similar historical significance. And I'll give you the Coles Notes version of this. It's the oldest house in our community and was moved to Amherstburg from Detroit in 1798 and is a fine specimen of Georgian architecture. The building played a substantial role in the Detroit River region's 18th and 19th century fur trade commerce. It's one of its earliest owners was a shareholder in the New Northwest Trading Company and another being a founding member of the Bank of Montreal. George Leith, another early owner, was on the board that allocated property lots during the lottery in the 1790s that initiated the town's non-military resident establishment. Mrs. Park was the granddaughter of William Caldwell, and he played significant roles in the American Revolution, War of 1812, and Aboriginal relations. The Park family in general were influential members of our community through commerce and trade. They were active members on various boards, including the library, education, medical offices, women's leagues, war efforts, town council, and mayor. This condensed version of the museum's cultural importance acts as a reminder that the museum's inhabitants of the last 200 plus years have participated in the interconnecting strategies that have facilitated the establishment and development of our town, not solely, but they kind of helped it. Some say, so what, or what's the big deal, and I like to respond with collaboration. We work very closely with the town's tourism department, River Lights Festival, Rotary Club, schools, museums, and galleries. Most recently, we have partnered with the Amherstburg Doll Museum for our annual vintage doll and toy exhibit. We are the tea room for the holiday house tours. By working together, we are able to create better programming, events, exhibits, and opportunities for our town's citizens, tourists, students, and potential residents. As per our mandate, the events and exhibits at the museum are designed to tell the story of Amherstburg, our achievements, our people, in a secular setting. Our education programs are designed to meet great expectations as outlined in the Ontario curriculum. Our student employment and volunteer opportunities are premeditated to build upon future employment skills, social skills, critical thinking, and to foster good citizenship. Our programming looks at aspects not always found within our core history books. We are public history. We complement learning outside of the classroom setting. Our visitors are able to see it, feel it, touch it, taste it, experience, think about it, learn about it. We're educational, but in a really fun way. Our second floor exhibits are changing summer exhibits, and they're inclusive of all Amherstburg history. We have presented artifact-heavy exhibits honoring World War I and World War II veterans. This past summer, we explored the 1920s. 2017, we will impart the story of women and progress in Amherstburg through 150 years of clothing. 2018 will bring an exploration of Amherstburg through archaeology exhibit. This year, our main floor is generally focused on Victorian life in Amherstburg, but we're really looking towards how Amherstburg and what life was like surrounding the Confederation in 1867. Also this year, the Halloween Festival and Dickens Christmas will be returning, as well as a new Harry Potter-themed education program. All of our museum's programming and collaborations are based on what's held in our community archival collection. By following our mandate, we look at what artifacts are in our collections and that guides our exhibits and programming. The community grant is the foundation for the preservation and conservation of our community archival collection. And this includes, and not limited to, preservation and conservation materials, accessioning materials, humidity control, temperature control, lux stability and monitoring, etc. We are a viable museum with established programming, but we undeniably need your support and contribution through the community grant. Since the establishment of the museum, the town of Amesburg has played a vital role in our community collections management, and you are keeping our history alive for future generations. Many community museums are operated by municipalities, so rather than looking at the community grant as spending money, please consider that the town is getting a great museum for only a fraction of the operational cost. There are many years, big and small, that keep this town moving toward the future, and we're just one of them. And like Churchill said, the farther back you can look, the farther forward you're likely to see. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, any questions? That was easy. Thank you.
Thank you.
That brings us to 3.7, CAD Assistance Team, Carla Liardi.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for allowing us to speak on behalf of the CAT, the CAT Assistance Team of Amesburg, and for considering us once again as part of your grant program. I would like to simply say that the monies that were given us as part of last year's grant program definitely served the purpose. If I were to compare it to the previous year, 2015, 2016 proved to be, actually in years prior, 2016 proved to be our best trapping season, if I can use that term, that we've ever had. And that is greatly due to the time that we didn't have to spend in holding yard sales and other events in order to raise the money that's necessary in order for us to do what we do, which is our mandate, which is to reduce the number of community cats. We were able to trap, spay, neuter 123 cats, I think, total, but yet we had projected, we had a goal of 150 cats, which is the highest that we've ever done. That we've ever made, and cats that were actually trapped. I believe we almost hit that, maybe shy of it, less than 10 cats, around 140 cats that were actually trapped. Some of them had to be euthanized. Some people decided to pay for it themselves. Some of the cats were kept by the Humane Society, therefore it didn't cost us anything because they were that friendly. They decided to put them up for adoption and other reasons. We have asked for a bit more money this year, and the reason for that is one of the most difficult things that we find. I hear a lot of the other groups talk about how they bring money into the community, and that is absolutely important to our community. What the CAT Assistance Team does is keeps the community clean. When I joined this group back in 2010, a couple of the council members at the time, they were inundated with phone calls with complaints about yowling and fighting and breeding and so on and so on. And it's to my understanding that this has come almost next to nothing, that there are very happy residents, they're very aware of what we've done, and the amount of complaints to certain council members has severely decreased because of that. And I'd like to make myself available to any questions that anybody might have.
Councilor Melange?
Thank you. In a program like this, shouldn't you start to see a declining need if you're trapping feral cats? It should start to decline at some point. I don't know what our bylaw is, but really it is on cats as well, but at least in your program,
mm-hmm.
I would think you would start to see a declining need for your service. Am I right or wrong?
No, eventually, yes, you're absolutely right. I think that it would greatly rely on the amount of cats. Amesburg has such a high number of community cats, and And unfortunately, it's what we've recognized is a big dumping area for people in the surrounding areas. With cats. What we would like to happen, and one of the things that's important in order for it to decrease is there is what's known as best practice in trapping, spaying, and neutering the cats going from zone to zone to zone. Our member base has never been large, and our volunteer base has never been that large where we can actually do it in one full swoop. So we do the best we can targeting zone areas until we're moving on to the next area. Of course, if we didn't do that, if we just did it sporadically throughout the county, throughout the town, it wouldn't make an impact at all. So based on the number of volunteers and members that we have, we have seen a significant decrease just in those zones alone. Eventually, should there be a less need for our services? Absolutely, and of course, that's what our goal is.
Thank you.
Councilor Fryer.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. Just a follow-up. I think, I would agree with you, Carla, but I think how long have you been doing this, and then how many years do you project that we'll get to that point? It's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not trapping 123 cats, and the problem's going to go away. People have to realize that. And, you know, I think there's many areas. It's unfortunate that you're seeing, I'm hoping that we don't become, because we're providing a service, a dumping ground for cats. Mm-hmm. But I do wanted to ask you one question, was the voucher program.
Mm-hmm.
And how many were you allowed to, or how many did you actually access from the town, and how many do you think in the future we're going to need?
Vouchers?
Yes.
The cat assistance team did not, we used our grant monies that we received from the town for our purposes, but we did not use any of the vouchers, as we saw that as a separate entity of a separate program being run by the town itself.
Okay. Yeah. So, maybe through you, Mr. Mayor, to Nicole, how many vouchers were used? Because we put them out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, through you to Nicole, how many did we use other people rather than using just the CAT assistant program then?
Through Mayor DiCarlo, so all 75 vouchers that were allocated for feral cats were taken by residents. We did reserve the program to the residential zones for 2016. So the proposal for 2017 that will be before you at the next council meeting will be to open it up throughout the town. And instead of 25 low-income vouchers, which we did put aside, none of those 25 were requested. We are going to do a 90-10 instead. So we are going to request a $5,000 program again. Open it up throughout the town this time, and a 90-10.
Yes, of course.
Do I have to press a button?
Yes.
My name is Renee St. Pierre. I joined the group a couple of years ago. I'm presently the president and the treasurer of the group. I just wanted to add that of the $5,000 that we received from the town last year, we also spent $5,000 of our own money. And we also went through another $4,000 this year in other expenses, other things that we do, so including building shelters. We spent approximately $2,500 just in food alone to maintain the colonies, to keep the cats healthy. So I just kind of wanted to add that we're not just solely existing on the grant money that we received from you, but it surely did give us more time to trap as opposed to fundraising. Thank you very much.
Councilor Pooja.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you to Carmel, your assistant. I just want to thank you for a great job that you and your CAD assistant team does. I was one of the counselors that I think you were referring to. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that my deputy mayor was here. He could attest to it, and I know that we have our former deputy mayor out there. We were inundated with complaints regarding cats. In the last 2 years, I haven't received one complaint. So obviously, your team is doing a great job. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Brings us to 3.8, Christ Church Anglican, Reverend Bill Strang. Okay. Then that brings us to a motion to receive all of the presentations. Councilor Levine, second Councilor Pryor. All those in favor? Carried. You want your break now? Okay. And if we could just take a, how long do you need?
15 minutes.
15-minute break right now, Councilor Pryor. And second, Councilor Levine, all those in favor? All right, we'll take a 15-minute recess.